Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @RightStream and #RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
To Write Stream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann. I'm an independent author, blogger, social media manager, and founder of the Write Stream Radio Network, and I thank you for tuning in today. I am so excited because I have a returning guest who is one of my favorite people, not to mention one of my favorite authors. I see that he's on the line, and we are going to be starting the interview in just a couple of minutes. But before I introduce him, I just wanted to take the opportunity to offer a few programming notes and let you all know, if you're not familiar with the network, that we've got some exciting changes in the works. First of all, we have a brand new website, which is still a work in progress, but I invite you to check it out at rightstreamradio.com. And I want to thank our Just Believe host, Lisa Tarvez, for all of her help with that, with establishing this new website, which will soon have a blog, so stay tuned. And Lisa and I are actually in the process of creating a new show that's going to broadcast on the network on Friday nights. We're not quite ready to unveil the name yet. Our designer has created this fantastic logo, but we'll be unveiling that shortly, and I'll be blogging about it at dariadigiovanni.com as well. So look for the brand new program to launch on the Write Stream Radio Network on Friday evenings, beginning on November 29th, but we'll be promoting that shortly. And speaking of Lisa Tarvez, if you missed this week's Just Believe, I encourage you to check out the archive because she had a very interesting interview with Helen Chin Liu, who is a reflexology expert out of Massachusetts. And they talked, Lisa's show, among the many topics they discuss, including spirituality and the paranormal, is alternative healing modalities. And Lisa frequently brings guests on in various who are practitioners in various disciplines. And this past week, Helen talked about reflexology at length. And we even had a few callers that called in to share their experiences with that. So if you missed it, just go to blogtalkradio.com /WriteStream, and that's WriteStream.com, where you can also listen to yesterday's Military Monday with host John D. Gresham. John is a military historian and journalist who's written several books. He also writes for the Defense Media Network and is frequently, you know, if you ever turn on the Discover Channel or the History Channel, you'll frequently find John. You'll see him on your TV screen because they fly him in to act as a consultant for various specials that they do. John is that well known as a military expert. This past week, he shifted his focus a little bit, and he interviewed Dr. Tanya Howard, who is a chiropractor working out of Annapolis, Maryland. And Tanya spoke at length about her work with veterans in helping them deal with chronic pain and overcoming the problems behind the chronic pain. And if you missed that interview, again, go to blogtalkradio.com/WriteStream and listen to Military Monday from yesterday with John D. Gresham and guest Dr. Tanya, because it was fascinating, very, very interesting. And, you know, you can listen to all their programs live. We have Just Believe at 1 p.m. on Sundays, Military Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, I should add. All times are Eastern. Military Monday, 1 p.m., obviously on Mondays. WriteStream Tuesday, broadcasting right now at 1 p.m. Eastern. And we have Family Power Hour with your host, Dr. Billy Eisenberg, a licensed clinical psychologist, and family law attorney Sheena Benjamin Wise, and they co-host Family Power Hour, and that debuted on the network back in August and airs every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, and that's really intended to be a call-in show for people to share their thoughts, their opinions, their best practices on improving relationships, on parenting, basically dealing with, you know, the full spectrum of life's little trials and tribulations. It's a safe forum. You can call in anonymously. You can participate in the chat room anonymously. But Dr. Billy and Sheena are there to just kind of help and discuss and support you. Look, life is challenging these days. So I encourage you to check out Family Power Hour, and they're doing a fantastic job. Also want to just thank this week the lovely, talented Lisa May, who invited me to be her guest on Big Dog Music Radio this past Saturday. That was a lot of fun. Lisa is so incredibly talented, and you can find the archive to that interview at DariaDiGiovanni.com if you're interested in checking it out. But I had a great time this past Saturday night hanging out with Lisa and all of the big dogs in the chat room. That's Big Dog, D-A-W-G. They're a great group, very extremely talented musicians, artists, singers, patriots. So visit them at bigdogmusicmafia.com. You can even join the community and get involved if you're so inclined. All right. Well, I think that's it for – oh, wait, one more thing. Guys, I just want to mention WriteStream now has a presence on LinkedIn. If you're on LinkedIn, we have a WriteStream radio group. Feel free to join us there. We have a WriteStream page on Facebook, WriteStream Radio. Of course, we're on Twitter at WriteStream and hashtag WriteStream. We're also now on Goodreads. You can find us at WriteStream and on Pinterest, also at WriteStream. So we are growing, and we thank you for your support and your listenership. So, all right, I am so excited today to welcome back Balazs Szabo, an author who has become a dear friend. And you may remember, I think it was back in May, my goodness, time is flying, I brought Balazs on to WriteStream Tuesday to talk about his excellent book, Knock in the Night, which deals with his, you know, real-life experience growing up in Hungary under communist oppression and then ultimately escaping during the uprising. And I can't recommend that book highly enough. So if you have not read it, it's definitely a warning for Americans as to what can happen when you take your freedom for granted and kind of let things slip away. So please take it from one who knows personally. Pick up a copy of Knock in the Night. But today we're going to talk to Balazs about his new book, Tweezer Beezer, which is quite a departure from Knock in the Night. It's an uplifting story of a minor bird who adopted a family in Hawaii, and it just so happens to be Balazs' family. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome Balazs Szabo to WriteStream, and we're going to talk about Tweezer Beezer. Hi, Balazs.
Good afternoon, rather. How are you, Darianne?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excited to be on your show. Shoot away. This is an exciting book for me, so I'd love to have your questions.
Great. Well, we're excited to have you. I'm so glad you could join me again. And as I said, you know, Tweezer Beezer is such a dramatic departure from Knock in the Night. And it's, you know, it's a book that's, you know, we're marketing it for kids. It's built for kids. But really, Balazs, I think it's the wisdom in that book is timeless. But let's start with, you know, what inspired you to write it?
Well, you know, creative people have bucket lists, but not toward the end of their lives. They just have bucket lists. And I have so many projects, accumulated experiences of life, which also shares, like many people, experiences with pets. And some of us have some very unique pets sometimes, and they take over your life and make a tremendous impression, and their loss causes significant loss and pain. And this little bird that adopted us through a horrible storm in Hawaii, where I first lived, stayed with us for 9 years. And the experiences that we had with him and his imprinting on us developed him very differently than he would have had a life in the wild. And we had a very hard time after he passed away to bury him. So the family, the children, we agreed that we're going to one day clone him, and we shoved him in the freezer, much like Tutankhamun. He had the hair from the children, little blonde hairs in there, little pictures in there, rose petals, his favorite shoelace in there, and we closed the lid on him, and Tweezer has been in a freezer ever since 1996, waiting for his reappearance in life. I was always reminded when I went to get something out of the freezer that one day I'm going to have to write about this bird. And eventually, now that the boys are grown up, I went through the albums, and of course Tweezer came up many, many times in pictures and videos and memories. And after finishing Knock in the Night, I thought, now I must write this book. This is a very important biography of my children's 9 years, and from about 4 years with the younger one, and up there when about 15, I think, when he was dead. And so that's and. You know, I'm painting a series of paintings, because I'm an artist, mainly. A Polynesian nostalgia. Polynesian nostalgia is just memories in pretty much abstract form of my 20 years in the islands of Hawaii. And I just couldn't continue it without sitting down and writing the book about Tweezer. And the more I search for pictures, the more inspired I'd become, and the more I realized how horrendous of a influence a tiny little life had on us as people. So there was no specific reason, but all of these reasons that made me write the book.
Yeah, well, you know, I think all of us who've had pets that have become like family can relate on some level to this. But this was no ordinary bird. And I didn't even know, you know, when I read your book, I had no idea how intelligent these minor birds are. And not only do they communicate, but they actually comprehend what you're saying. Tell us a little bit about Tweezer and what life was like with him.
Well, Tweezer, I don't mind even giving away the story, because it's parents who are going to buy it for kids or read it. And, you know, even if I tell you the story, it'll be in detail in the book and much more inspiring. Tweezer fell out of a drain, and his egg opened up, and he wasn't even hatched yet. So in essence, he was a preemie. And against all odds, he survived, and my children insisted that we keep him and not let the cat take him, as was my suggestion, or nature. And he made it. And 10 days later, after I squirted food in one end and he squirted it back to me at the other, he survived and he opened his eyes and he immediately thought that he was one of us because he imprinted. I was daddy and the brothers were my two boys. And, you know, we took care of him. We fed him different foods and we were discovering things that he eats and he doesn't like to eat. And then he was making discoveries. And then his feathers grew out, and the children taught him how to fly. And, of course, the children still haven't learned from him, but he flew very well. And eventually we're going to return him to nature, and it was a very, very bad, tragic day for us. And we went through the whole experience, and lo and behold, Tweezer returned. I'm not telling you the details, of course, of the book, but eventually he returned. And then we realized that he's imprinted and he has no desire to live out his life with the rest of the minor birds in nature. And then we went to Hungary for vacation for a month, and then we had somebody bird sit for us. And we had some problems with the people who fell in love with Tweezer because they discovered how intelligent he is. And they had a bookstore. And he loved to run over to the cashier machine and take out the receipt and give it to the person that bought a book. And it just made their bookstore so famous, and they made so much money that they wanted to buy Tweezer. We weren't going to sell Tweezer to them, but they were ready to name the bookstore after him. And it was a very bad experience. We lost friends over that one. And then we moved to what the Hawaiians call mainland. We moved to Connecticut. And through Tweezer's eyes in this book, I introduce Hawaii to the readers, both adults and children, Connecticut through the nature and what difference there are, you know, in flowers and so on. And then we moved to North Carolina and the experiences here with hurricanes and so forth. So the fact that he imprinted on us, Tweezer wanted to take part in everything that we humans were doing. So if we went into a swimming pool, he dove in a swimming pool. Can you imagine that? He almost drowned. Or if the children were playing hide and seek, he was so intelligent that he knew when to hide and when to seek. And we had some funny events with him because he would have a special place he would hide, and then he would hide there for months. And, of course, we had to pretend that, you know, we're looking for him, call his name, and eventually discover him. And he would scream when he was discovered. And then one day he changed his hiding place, and it was the funniest experience we had. But Tweezer went through some tragic things, major injuries. We have lost him in a storm in Connecticut, and he was blown away by a huge storm 50 miles from where we were living. And three and a half weeks later, by total sheer accident, we were looking for him everywhere, but couldn't find him. And by sheer accident, I saw a small sign on a nature place where they, you know, bring in animals and so on. And I called there in the afternoon, and I said, well, I haven't, by any chance, has anybody seen a bird that doesn't belong here? And, you know, it's just not a, you know, say it's a Polynesian bird, not a four-season bird from here. And the man says, well, somebody brought a bird in from Milford, you know, Connecticut, which is 50 miles away from here. And it says it's got a yellow beak, and it's jumping all over my desk. It opened the cage door, and it's stealing my pencils. And I said, that's Tweezer. And we went and found Tweezer there. And, of course, Tweezer rejoiced. He loved raw hamburger meat, and so Chandra, my oldest son, had, you know, a glob of it ready in his hand, and Tweezer was so sweet. I mean, he went into his baby mode, begging for the meat, although he knew how to eat, but he wanted to be fed by hand because he reverted from the big experience of being lost. And it's very interesting.
So traumatized.
Trauma. He went through a trauma, and he went to a baby mode for the longest time. We had to baby him, and he would not leave our sight. He would stay inside. Otherwise, he was always allowed out because he was not a bird. So if we went out, he went out, and we went back to the house. He came back into the house, you know. So he was very special. He and I think, you know, we all have pets, but having a little wild bird imprint on you, the experiences are probably more colorful and more deep because they're highly intelligent. And I don't know if the domestic animals have that much wit and intelligence because they've been domesticated so long. You know, they've been enabled, as we speak, of being people being enabled nowadays here. But this depth of experience, you know, children probably have that who live on farms, but kids who grow up in, you know, in smaller neighborhoods where they're not allowed to have farm animals and so on, they don't have this expense of experiences, only have a dog or cat or a little bird, and this, you know, they lose a bit out by that. And my children had, luckily, this very unique experience of having this particular little animal.
Yeah, and Blaz, you know, I love how you wrote the story kind of through Tweezer's eyes. You really sort of humanized him, personified him. And I love the story because you mentioned, you know, he was from the wild, and you guys kind of domesticated him to some extent. And one of my favorite parts of the book is when he's learning to fly. And you tell that through Tweezer's eyes, and you finally, like, push him off the ledge, and he just kind of flopped on the floor.
Yep.
At first.
My children, I built my own house in Hawaii for art, so I had 40-foot ceilings. And my studio was the third level, and so it was quite high. It was about 24 feet off the ground from the downstairs room. And that was just throw him over the edge of the railing, and Tweezer, not having seen anybody fly, he did not open his arms. He just went and fell like a lead, you know, or a rock. Luckily, he hit a couch, and then he bounced a few times, and the kids were right on him 2 seconds later and took him back out, says, hey, he needs more practice. And they threw him off several times. Eventually, he figured out that if he opens his wings, he won't hit so hard. And by the afternoon of I don't know how many times being launched out, he figured out that he can actually glide, and then he discovered on his own. By the time I came home, I was out on a business meeting, Tweezer actually was able to take short sorties out from a couch to another chair, and he would be yelling out of happiness and you know, applauding himself. It was really fantastic. I mean, he had a personality, and it was interesting, you know, intelligent people, just like intelligent animals, have humor. I mean, Tweezer actually had humor, and he loved laughter, and he learned laughter from my son, and he laughed just like him. But one morning, before we knew that he is actually learning to talk, I was sleeping in, and one of the children kept on saying on Saturday morning, I was sleeping in, I said, Dad, Dad. And I said, shush, go play. I'm going to sleep a little more. And the assistant, you know, voice of my oldest son was, Dad, Dad. Oh, so I got up and went to the bedroom to see what's the matter. And I'm looking at the boys. They're dead asleep. I thought, wow, they're just pretending. So I'm going to stick around a little bit. All of a sudden, from behind me, Tweezers, standing on some furniture, goes, Dad, Dad, in my son's voice. I almost fainted because I thought somebody was behind me. But he mimicked the voice so perfectly well. But talking about talking and mimicking, you know, parrots mimic, and parrot is the expression, you parrot somebody. Tweezer eventually made connection between words. And he also knew when to laugh. He didn't laugh when he got hurt. He said, ow, Dad, ow, when he got hurt. Aww. So he knew what that means. And It was one day he got very, very injured, and we were driving him to the vet, and for 2 hours, because we birds specialty doctors, you know, are very few and in between, so we had to go from Connecticut to Kensington, Connecticut, 2 hours away, and he kept on crying, Dad, ow, Dad, I. Well, we almost died by the time we got to the vet because we just couldn't take it. You know, it's just awful that he's communicating and telling us that he's really hurting.
That's amazing.
Yeah, amazing little guy. He was so so bright that after he got the cast on, we thought he's going to die from his injury. Somebody stepped on him and crushed him. And the doctor said, you know, eventually, we thought he's going to come out, so he's going to die. But he said, no, it's fine. He has no internal injuries, but he's broken his leg so badly that he will never be able to use it. And so he had a cast on, which Tweezer very shortly removed. So we had to drive back again to the doctor. He put a plastic cast on, which was more durable. He couldn't take it off. But once he healed, Tweezer, his fingers couldn't move, his leg just hung there. And Tweezer would not accept that. He kept on beating that leg. And we thought, oh, my God, this is terrible. He's going to beat it until he chews it off, and that's going to be really gross. He's going to amputate his own leg. And lo and behold, despite all his injuries of the muscles and the tendons, and the doctor showed us that this is why it's not going to work and blah, 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 Tweezer got every one of his toes working. He healed himself. He just did not take no for an answer, and he was as good as new 3 months later. I mean, it was
incredible, unbelievable.
We took him back to the doctor and says, you know, I'm a physician. There's only one word for this. This is a miracle. It has nothing to do with medicine and nothing. He says, I cannot believe that this happened. He is not supposed to function at all, and I don't know how this bird did it. I mean,
well, you know, beloved, there's a good lesson for life right there about never giving up. I mean, Tweezer just, like you said, wouldn't take no for an answer, and he kept pushing and pushing and pushing until he got the use of his leg back.
Yeah, you
pretty
know,
amazing.
A lot of people don't believe the doctors when the doctor says something, and you keep on saying, no, I'm not going to believe you. I'm gonna succeed at being healed, you know? And that self-healing is a very powerful thing. And Tweezer demonstrated that quite clearly, you know? Can you imagine what we humans could do if we would believe that our brains are good enough that we can heal ourselves, you know?
Yeah, well, it's that determination and that belief and that persistence that I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to take no for an answer. I'm going to, in this case, walk again or use my leg again. Pretty amazing.
Experience. You know, one of the important things I think I realized through writing the book is because other memories came in, you know, the interaction of this little animal with our other pets and what happened to them in the meantime. So it became a more complete story about everybody under that roof. Was that when we first lost our cat and the cat died, and Dominic has written that beautiful, beautiful four-page letter, which I condensed into a one-page letter for the book. You know, he was 12 years old, and the loss of his cat was, and I never knew that he was a little macho boy, you know, he never showed that much emotion. My older boy was more emotional. Dominic would have an injury, his leg would fall off, and he would, no problem, you know, he was a little toughy. And then he locked himself in a room for 2 days and never came out. And one day he came out, went into the woods, and I went back to his room and found this crumbled up. He crumbled it up, even threw it away, this letter in a trash that he wrote to his cat, his deceased cat. And it was the most beautiful, feeling, deep letter. And how many ways a child can think. I learned so much about my own son. So, you know, all of the animals actually teach us parents about our kids, and my children were so well attending our pets. They took care of them so well. They learned to love them. And little pets, universally, interesting how we're connected in life to all living things that we have in common. We have love in common. I mean, you can see birds giving each other affection or any other animal. Actually, now I have a stupid goat, and she's totally in love with me because she's a herd animal, and there are no other goats around, so I'm it. I'm called a herd. And now she's flirting with me and rubbing against me, and if I go for a run, she's all upset and cries and gets out of the pen because she wants to see where I'm going. I mean, it is so interesting how we universally connected with the one thing, and that's love. It's it's one thing you learn through little pets and animals, and of course, their loss is huge. And in this book, I think, not just through Dominique's letter, but through the death of Tweezer in the end, children, it has sad things in it, but it's important for children to learn to prepare their little hearts for loss, loss of pets, loss of grandparents, loss of something. So it's not a sad story, but it does have serious lessons that prepares children's emotions in a healthy way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you were...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, when you were telling the story about the cat, my gosh, it brought back memories. I mean, I was devastated. The cat I had from the time I was 10 till the time I was 19 was just killed by a car right in front of me. And I just remember how devastating that was, not just for me, but the whole family. So it's true. And I think, you know, that's one of the lessons that kids, you know, do need to learn, you know, about the life cycle and the process of grief, but learning how to love what you had and treasure the time that you have.
Yeah.
With not only pets,
and
but people.
You take everyone's life for granted next to you, and pets included. You know, you think they'll always be there. And it always comes as such a shock when we lose them, because there's no way you can, you know, take the time back and go back into the past. And that's it. No more communication. And it's really sad. And it's a shock to the living, you know. It's very difficult. That's why it's so good to take a lot of pictures and a lot of videos of your pets, because you never know that in the future you might want to write a book. You need the material, you know. And unfortunately, I'm still looking. I think I have some Betamax and some 8mm videos of Tweezer, and I bought machines so I can look at it and then possibly convert it over to DVD and make it part of the presentation of Tweezer, maybe on YouTube and so on and so forth. But I did discover which was a great find for me. Colette Harris, a lady in Hawaii, has a minor bird much like ours was. And on YouTube you can find it, Amazing Talking Minor Conversation 1 on YouTube. And her little bird, Kaleo, is a magnificent talker as well. He talks and jokes and laughs. And the wonderful thing is that Kaleo proves that I did not invent this bird, Tweezer Beezer, but they're really highly intelligent birds. And I'm so glad that Kaleo is there. And it does take, you know, a time that you have to spend with very closely, you know. You have to talk to these little birds a lot, and then they learn. You can't just take them for granted and walk away, that's a talking bird, you learn to talk. You have to spend time with them. And so Kaleo's mom really done a lot of work, and I think Kaleo was 5 or 6 years old now. And I'm glad he's there, because I haven't found my tapes yet. But as soon as I find them, I'm going to put them on YouTube so people can actually hear Tweezer alive and see him alive.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. Like you said in the book, Balazs, it gives a whole new meaning to the expression bird brain. So in terms of a minor bird, if somebody calls you that, it might actually be a compliment.
Definitely is a compliment. And if you eat like a bird, that's not a compliment. If you eat like a bird, you're eating 16 times the weight of your body. So, by having this kind of a pet, you learn that some of these expressions are totally off.
Yeah, I think pigs must be offended, because they always take the brunt of that, you know, eat like a pig, you know, meaning you eat a lot, but really it's the birds, so.
Yeah, right.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, Balazs, we're at the bottom of the hour. I just want to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk to you a little, you know, you're an internationally acclaimed artist. I want to talk about your art and the art that you selected for Tweezer, because it is beautiful. So I just want to take a short break, and we'll be back after these commercial messages.
Okay.
Sunday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern, tune in to Rightstream Radio Network for Just Believe with author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis. Lisa interviews experts in the areas of health and wellness, alternative healing,
paranormal phenomena, intuitive guidance, and positive living. With her own inimitable down-to-earth style, Lisa makes both guest and callers welcome and appreciated. Just Believe with Lisa Tarvis, Sunday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network. Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network.
You're listening to the RightStream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Daria Ann. I am here with my guest, Balaj Sabo, author of Tweezer Beezer. And Balaj, just before I went to break, I mentioned that you are an internationally acclaimed artist, and Tweezer Beezer is just filled with your original artwork. So tell us about that. Did you create those paintings, the pictures that appear in Tweezer specifically for the book, or had they been part of another collection that you had done?
No, they've been part of my 20 years of being in Hawaii. I just used them for the book. The only artwork that I did for Tweezer Beezer were those two pen and ink drawings. The rest were done by James Ellidge, a man who owns a place to copy down in Raleigh. He's a wonderful, wonderful geek, and he can do all of these posits for me. I directed him, and he did exactly what I wanted when he was able to put my Tweezer photographs in to make it look like it's part of the painting. So it was a lot of fun, a lot of creativity on his part in a technical sense. I'm not able to do these things. I've never learned how to do it. I would love to, but none of the things in the art were done for this project. I just took advantage of it.
That's fantastic. And Balaj, what was the process of writing Tweezer like? I mean, how long did it take you? I know you mentioned going through family albums, photo albums, and things like that. Did anyone keep journals about Tweezer? Like, how did you put the whole story together?
No, I kept no journals. I did that with Knocking the Night for 17 years, things that came into my in my mind. But with Tweezer, it was just a inspiration. I was jolted into doing it, I don't recall what exactly started it. But right after our radio interview with you in May, I started in June, and slowly I got into it, and I got into it more and more and more, and it just sucked me in totally emotionally, and I realized I'm reliving my my children's childhood, and it was really just a nostalgia for that time of our life, and Tweezer was the glue. I mean, it was just it was a perfect excuse for me to relive it, and my boys, they're big boys now, one 31 and the other one's 28, soon to be 29. I'm sure they shed a tear, as you realized from the way they are in the book and Dominique's feelings and letters, but they certainly did not let me in on it. So I don't know what, they have the book and read it, but nobody called me back and, expressed to me their emotions. I guess they're too much to do that now.
I guess some of the toughest critics are family. Tweezer has a 5-star rating on Amazon. You've gotten several reviews. I, of course, posted a review on my blog. And Harriet Park, author of Agenda 21, wrote the introduction for Tweezer. And from what I can tell, it's been very positively received out there.
It has been. And, of course, you know, in self-publishing, eventually you run out of people that you know and friends that buy your book. And I have, thank God, I have thousands because not only all my clients that buy my art and the many friends I had having lived in so many states, I used to also work as a flight attendant for Pan Am and United for a few years, and there are many, many friends, thousands of flight attendants who are, you know, buying the book. But eventually one has to find another mode to sell the item, and that's social media. And of course, people who know what to do, like yourselves, know how to communicate with the public that otherwise we have no way of reaching. And going to a so-called traditional publisher is very problematic, because you can be trying it. Look at Ayn Rand. She went to 36 publishers, and everybody rejected her book, Fountainhead. And then one publisher, after years and years of her pushing it, and she had all the connections too, published her book, and she became world-renowned. But, you know, most people will not go through that because they don't have the energy or the ego to stick with it, you know. And so eventually, even though we're self-published and we're able to create the product and make a good product, we eventually need some other person that's an expert in doing it. Social media is the way to market things now. And eventually, I hope we put the other publishers out of business.
Yeah, hear, hear, Balazs. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Obviously, I mean, in 2008, when I independently published my book, you know, the reason why I decided to go ahead and do that, well, one of the reasons was because at the time, I was also editing a book for a client, and this was a book in the health and wellness genre. It had nothing to do with politics or anything of that nature, anything that, you know, these traditional publishers would tend to reject if they don't sort of fit their agenda.
Right.
But I was watching her jump through all of these hoops, trying to get a literary agent, trying to get the book, and the book was excellent. And finally,
yep.
In the course of that, she ended up self-publishing as well.
Otherwise,
you know what?
I would lose years. This book would not be a physical book now had I not done everything on my own. And maybe luckily you'll get in there somewhere. If not, at least I've created it and I feel I've done something. But also, you know, people out there who look for it run to Amazon. And there are a lot of good reviews on Amazon and so on, but Amazon undersells my book, and I don't know where they print it, but they send people an inferior copy, whereas on CreateSpace, people get a much better, for a few dollars more, they get a really good quality printing. So, and I have a good website where people can read three free chapters and look at some videos and so on and so forth to get a better feeling of the book, which is that http://balazsart.wix.com/tweezerbeezer. And if people purchase through that website, which is connected to CreateSpace, they get a good quality book, which is much more satisfying to me as an author and to the people who buy the book, because as a gift you don't want to give a schlocky, you know, product.
So true. That is so true. And Balazs, just so you know, my friend Robert, good friend Robert, who also hosts a show called Dead Wrong Radio on my WeBuiltThatNetwork.com network, he's tweeting that out. I put the link to the CreateSpace page, and he's going to tweet that out for me, and we put a link to the website in the chat room. And, yeah, I encourage everyone, you know, if you're an independent author especially, you know, support other independent authors and purchase the book through CreateSpace, and you get a better quality copy, and the author that's put all this hard work into it, you know, let's face it, you get to make a few dollars more, which I think is a good thing, right? We're all capitalists, and, you know, you've certainly, with Knock in the Night and with Tweezer Beezer, have put a lot of time, love, and energy into creating a high-quality product. So I think that we as your supporters and fans and you know, people that put out good work should really do our best to support you. So I want to encourage everyone to purchase Tweezer Beezer from CreateSpace and get a better quality copy, like you said.
And, you know, it costs, even a self-published book, you know, it costs money to find an expert to help you with the technical side of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, it's not free, and you have to pay for other people's services. You asked me about my fine arts availability. BalazArt.com is a website that I have. It is not a website where you buy through it. It used to function that way, but I no longer do it. I'd rather have people who purchase my works contact me by the email that's on there, which is a Yahoo email, BalazArt@Yahoo.com. And because sometimes people want to talk to something to me about an artwork, and then they decide they want another one, and then I have, you know, opportunity to talk to them whether they want an original, which is quite expensive, but of course collectors and a lot of people do buy originals. And the same work can be bought on a limited edition basis, and most of my limited editions are sold for $800, yet they're worth more than $4,000. So there's a lot of equity in it, and I have professional appraisers, art appraisers who work for museums appraising my work. So it's not, you know, it's not value and price that I invent, but they're actually based on a professional, you know, research and so on and so forth.
Excellent. Well, we put a link to Balazs Art in the chat room as well, and I want to encourage everyone to please check that out. Balazs, I want to talk to you a little bit about Refugee Press, your publishing company. Speaking of, you know, we talked about independently publishing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, all right, that's all bigger subject. I really wanted to create my own publishing company with a name that somehow relates to who I am and what I am. And I would like to publish other people's works who went through, you know, there are millions of us from China, from Korea, from Cuba, from Venezuela, everywhere. There are millions of us here in America very frustrated because we don't really have a voice to educate Americans about what's going on today in the world, not just in America. There's a global takeover, and because of technology, very scary things are happening to the world, and people are not informed. They can't recognize the signs. But we do, because we come from worlds like that, and that's why we're in America, because we got away. We became refugees. This is our refuge, which we're losing now because Americans that don't have the experience to recognize evil. And surely there's a lot of evil coming. And, you know, when people say forward, it means backwards. When they say hope, it means just the opposite. And when they say, you know, free health care, it means just the opposite. I mean, we've been through that stuff in our countries. We've been lied to many times. And Americans still believe that if there's a president in a White House, he's a person who's going to do something wonderful for us. Well, we better start not assuming things and start being more critical. And maybe we have an enemy in there. So I want to help open the eyes of Americans. I want to get more refugees to have a voice and maybe start a blog. Maybe somebody like you could help me in Refugees for America. I created a logo, and I would love to give all the silent foreigners a voice. And that's why I also named the company Refugee Press. And I'll email you, I don't know if I have not yet, Refugees for America, the R is a sickle and a hammer. just to wake people up that everything can be hidden, and there's a foreshadowing of some bad stuff. And of course every on the American flag of that logo, every red stripe is replaced by red barbed wire. That's to symbolize our loss of freedoms in this country.
Frightening. Yeah. You know, Balazs, I interviewed not too long ago, probably back in May, right around the time I interviewed you, an author by the name of Boon Yam, and he is an amazing person. He survived the Cambodian killing field. And he wrote a book called Tomorrow I'm Dead, and it's about, you know, it's a real-life story of how, you know, he and his family were just ripped from their home, thrown into the jungle, forced into slave labor, like 23 hours a day, given, you know, he got separated from his family, subsisted on one little cup of rice every day, saw, you know, all of his friends around him being slaughtered every day by the communists, and he ultimately escaped and eventually went on to become a leader in the Cambodian Freedom Army, and he rescued thousands of his own citizens. And it's a harrowing story, but like yours, it's also hopeful because it shows the triumph of the human spirit as well as the brutality and just the, you know, the genocide that
the
communism
thing
brings.
The sad thing is that in freedom is complacency, and in this country people think, oh, that only happens to those slobs in the other continent. It can never happen to us here. Well, in the last 90 years, so many things have been going in that direction in this country, and the frog has been cooking very slowly, and this is how they win. This is how they win.
Yeah.
People don't feel the changes. If the changes come very fast, like Obamacare does now, and it knocks on everybody's door because now people are seeing their money, only one lump sum leave their wallet, you know, because taxes you don't see, you know, they slowly seep away and so on and so forth. But now that might wake up Americans, and the very Americans who are supporting Obamacare, who are supporting this president, are going to feel in the pocket, and they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, somebody lied to me. And maybe something will happen in this country. I hope they keep this up fast, because that's the only time people wake up, when the temperature changes, you know, radically.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. You know, Balaji, I wanted to tell you, too, speaking of Obamacare, which let's just call it what it is, socialized medicine, you know, I participated in all of those town halls in 2009 when we were fighting so hard not to have this rammed down our throats. And the most passionate people at these town halls and in any rally that I would go to, any just about any meeting, were the people from Iran, people who escaped from Cuba, you know, people just like yourselves who would, and the refrain, I mean, it was like I was having the same conversation no matter where the person was from. They would say, we saw all this play out. It's hauntingly familiar. We came here to escape this, and you don't understand. It's being destroyed right before your very eyes. Of course, I understand that, but, you know, most Americans, you know, unfortunately don't. And I think Refugee Press is such a fantastic idea to give voice to these authors who are basically penning these warnings, not just about their own life, but penning them as a warning to America. Because, Balaj, you know, when you were speaking, I thought of that expression that goes something like, you know, you never know what you've got till it's gone. And that is so true of freedom, and it does breed complacency. You're absolutely right.
And it's not so easy to get it back. It took 90 years to these rascals to steal it from us, and it'll take 90 years to get it back. And that's, you know, that's five generations. And Obamacare is not socialized medicine. It's communist medicine. It's pushing toward totally one care system. It's totally the government owning it, and only North Korea and Cuba have this system. Europe has socialized medicine. It's quite different because Europe also has private insurances and private things. So it has both government and private enterprise. He's pushing this to total government control because there's taxes involved, there's other things, controls involved, this and all
special
sorts
interest.
Of, everything in there. This is a big lump of hairy black hole. This is a very bad thing. We're going to suck into it. We all going to disappear financially, and we have no freedoms. This will be a dark millennium. I don't even think it's a century. I don't know how we would be able to get rid of this system, because the technology will make sure that only the people, ruling class, will have technology, and the rest of the people will not have access to technology. You know, they're elitist. Communists are elitist. They're just simply power-hungry people. And it's very frightening, which brings me back to Agenda 21 from Harriet Park, and I'm so indebted to her to take part in Tweezer Beezer. I mean, you know, she writes this fantastic book, and then she writes forward for my silly little book about a pet, but I love her dearly, and she's pretty soon going to come out with her sequel, and I can hardly wait. And,
me either.
People want to see how dark life will be, and you know, what she writes seems like a novel, and, you know, but it is not. It is what's coming. If people don't get off their butt and start educating themselves and their children to see and to intelligently judge for themselves and not be carried away with this mass hysteria that they've done in those last two elections.
That's so true. And Balaj, I just want to take a moment to let our listeners know, if you want to call in and chat with Balaj about Tweezer Visa or anything we're discussing here on the air, it's 347-945-7246. That's 347-945-7246. Just press 1, and I will bring you on the air so you can ask your question. But, you know, Balaj, I think Harriet and others like her, they're really onto something by writing fiction as well, because I think a lot of times, especially in America today with the state of our pop culture and our media, you know, and something like Agenda 21, for example, you know, nobody's going to read, unfortunately, a 1,000-page document, even though it's going to directly impact their lives in a very negative way. But by creating a story that's fiction, you can entertain people and get the point across. And, of course, in Agenda 21, in the back, there's all kinds of – the whole bill is in the back, the program and what that's all about. But by that
right.
time, the reader's been entertained – well, I say entertained, but it's harrowing. I mean, it was a page-turner. But, I mean, I found myself crying out loud certain parts, and certain parts I was on the edge of my seat. But I think it's kind of a way to get in through the back door with some people, whereas if they won't read a story, although I recommend everybody read Knock in the Night, I think there's nothing more telling than a real person who's really lived through this telling their real-life story. But for some people, I think fiction is the way to go because they just will not listen. But maybe if you entertain them, they might stick around for the rest of the story.
Yeah, well, you know, my autobiography is like a fiction. It's interesting because I look back, it appears like it's somebody else's life, not mine, because I'm so removed from their experiences, having been in freedom now for over 56 years. But interesting, many of my liberal friends, and I do have some, because I'm an artist and they think, you know, artists are liberal. They just don't realize that, you know, I have pains. And because of my experiences, also, I'm not a liberal. They read my book and they say, oh, that was a wonderful story. I like, you know, yeah, I like what you said here, what you said. But they never make the connection. It's amazing. It does not put them on the track of understanding. They just read it and they just, somehow they're so removed from reality, liberals are. And it just boggles the mind. It blows the fuses in my head. I cannot get to them. I cannot understand that. So they can be well-read and make no connection to reality of their life. And these are the people that brought us Hitler and Stalin and all that, because they were in La La Land. They followed these people and they led them, and, you know, that's why Lenin called them the useful idiots. Because Lenin would shout something and put something on a banner, and Stalin and Hitler, and they just followed, you know? And you know, Hitler did the same things. He brought hope and change, the same words. And those poor suckers, if he would have said, hey, I'm going to gas 6 million people, nobody would have followed him. Obviously, he said all these sweet, lovely things that Obama said. The same thing here. They all followed. If they would have said, hey, listen, I'm going to cost your free health care and I'm going to ruin your economy, they would not have voted for him. But they're so stupid. They believe in these honey words, and they don't, because they're too lazy to really look at. They never vetted this guy. They just liked what he said, you know? And that's what's frightening, because all dictators do that. I mean, you know, if you want to trap something or somebody, what you do is you put some little sweet things in the trap, and then the silly person comes, doesn't look around, and just wants to grab the sweet thing, and the trap door closes on them, you know? Right now, I'm going to do that to a fox in my yard right now. I'm going to put a chicken leg in there because he's been eating my chicken. So I'm going to put a nice little leg in there. He's going to be like a liberal. He will just focus on the sweet thing, and he'll go in there and I'll catch him.
Yeah, well, and Vlad, I would submit to, we're talking about Obama specifically. Unfortunately, I think he's just the culmination, and you alluded to this before, of 100 plus years of progressive indoctrination of every American institution we have. And I have to say they've been very patient, very deliberate, and very focused in infiltrating the public school system, academia, pop culture, the media. And I'm not excusing any of these people for being blind to what's going on around them. I'm just simply saying that with all of that going on, it's made it possible for somebody like Obama to get elected because it softened up the electorate. Now we have people actually believe that it's the president's job, you know, to pay your bills, get you a house, put gas in your gas tank. And we've lost, you know, the sense of American self-reliance, the work ethic, the Judeo-Christian principles. Whether you're a Christian or a Jew or whether you're an atheist, those principles are what made this country great. And, you know, American communists especially understood that. And there's a documentary, I don't know if you've seen this, it's called Agenda, Grinding America Down, that does an excellent expose of all of that. It was produced by a man named Curtis Bowers, who was a state rep in Idaho. And years ago, in 1992, he infiltrated a meeting of American communists. You know, he went there just to see what they were talking about. And they laid out their agenda, and he thought to himself, oh, they're crazy. This is never going to happen. Well, fast forward 16 years to 2008, and it suddenly hits him, oh, my God, they've accomplished just about everything. So he put documentary
FDR,
together.
FDR was a big proponent of, you know, he did the worst destruction to this country, and that's installed all sorts of socialist things, not things that help society to send on their 2 feet, but to, he actually prolonged the recovery, you know, of the times in the 30s and afterwards. So, and they never went away. I mean, this is like disease. It stayed in there, and it's just terrible. And, of course, there's a lot of communists in America in those years, and kids don't study history, so they don't know, because the educators have been on the left for 7 years. You know, I couldn't believe the things I was hearing and studying here when I came to America. You know, it was just bizarre to me. I could not understand how come these people be, you know, living in this fantastic country with these wonderful things that it offers, opportunities, and yet they talking against it and they want to destroy it by the things they saying. And this, you know, the 60s was a perfect example of that, when they marched against the Vietnam War and so on. They never even looked into what it's all about, you know.
No, a lot of that was communist groups too, you know, just like with the Iraq and Afghanistan War. It was groups like ANSWER. It was organized. It was the organized left paying people.
Yeah, they didn't know they were being led by organized people, you know. We were infiltrated for the longest time now. But people don't educate themselves, so they don't believe these things. So that, this is fiction, you know, and it is not fiction, you know. All the people on Wall Street, remember the people that disrupted everything last year, and they were paid off people, you know. That's their profession.
All orchestrated, the whole Occupy thing. And what's so interesting to me, Balaj, and I've gotten into some interesting Twitter dialogues with people, you know, is how your average person on the street seems to think that Wall Street, you know, some greedy, evil Republican, well, they're crony capitalists. They love the government seat. I mean, and they overwhelmingly supported Obama. So I think that was laughable, that whole Occupy Wall Street thing, when most of them were supporting that agenda. And it's also very interesting, you know, Peter Schweizer has a new book out, and this is even scarier, and it kind of speaks to what you're saying, that it's not so much that these businesses are in bed with the politicians, in that, as much as it is they're being forced. It's almost like we've got the mafia in charge in D.C. And I include both political parties. I include, there's plenty of senators and Congress people on, you know, with whether it's an R or a D after the name, it's progressivism infiltrated everything.
Progressivism is the new name for communism, you know. So it's just, they always give a new name so people don't recognize their cloak, you know. So, you know,
but the book points out that a lot of these companies, and I can't say the name escapes me right now, are threatened by the communists, let's use that term, in D.C., those in power, that, you know, kind of like, hey, it's nice business you got there. Shame if something were to happen to it. So in other words, this book is saying that it's not just that big business, and many of them are self-interested and they love the government handouts, but a lot of them are actually threatened. If you don't toe the line, we're going to saddle you with more regulations. We're going to destroy your company. And that, to me, is even more frightening.
What happened to that company with the guitars? Remember that?
Yes.
When
Gibson
the first
guitars
company Obama went after. And that's what they do. If you're not on their side, the big corporation gets threatened and blackmailed, and they step in line with the government. And then what happens is, eventually, the government, they're just too stupid. They think they're playing the game. The government will take over them. And they're going to be purged in the end. But they just think they're doing good business by being, you know, nice to the present government. They're all corrupt in Washington now. The whole D.C. bunch should be thrown out. And we have to have people, the Tea Party people, that brings in healthy new blood, that believe in people, believe in honesty and the truth and the Founding Fathers' laws, because they are permanent. They're not something that you have to change. You know, those things are the truth that we have to really ingrain into children to fight this brainwashing that they're getting now in the educational system.
Oh, absolutely, Balazs. You know, I'm ghostwriting a book for someone that's it's fiction. It's set in the future, but it draws heavily upon history. And I've had to do a lot of research into communism and various, not just communism, but other all forms of totalitarianism. And you know, when you really think about the history of the world, it's really been a history of oppression, whether it's monarchies, oligarchies, dictators, communists, whatever it is. And here come, you know, along come America's founding fathers. And they create a nation with a system of governance that upholds and reveres the individual and his or her right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And these kids now are so brainwashed, they've completely lost the concept of American exceptionalism, all by design, of course. But, you know, our founding fathers were really the quote-unquote cool guys that came up with something unprecedented in the history of the world. And it's just so depressing to me that whole message is lost. Today.
Yeah, you know, I'm reading Mark Levin's Liberty and Tyranny, which is a great, great book. Right now that, you know, again, refreshes, again, all of those ideas and what our culture is. And we lost our culture. That's it. They attacked our culture. That was our culture for the longest time. And we got lazy, complacent, and we allowed the bad guys to get into our educational system. We allowed the government to handle our educational system, and that was the biggest mistake we ever did. And we just have to take back our education. We have to take back our Medicare, our health care. We have to take back our education. We have to take our children's minds back, which they have taken from us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all our fault. No,
several
generations allowed this to happen. Because what the Founding Fathers have created was working so well that people did not have to get involved in politics. All they had to do is enjoy life, get a job, get a good paycheck, enjoy their friends, and enjoy freedom.
Yeah.
And with
that, raise your kids, go to church if you want to.
We were wide open because we were not paying attention to politics because we didn't have to. And now, and I hope it's not too late, Americans are waking up and educating themselves, because a lot of people are reading books they never read in school. But, you know, I just fear, because of technology, it can go both ways, but I just fear for us, because things can happen that we cannot even imagine. These guys are planning things. Most everything is a distraction. I think it's Obamacare is a distraction. I don't think they ever wanted it to work. It had nothing to. They're doing something else behind our back, and we don't know what it is. We don't know what it is. And, you know, that's why they're trying to, when you're thinking about things and putting things together, they're going to say, conspiracy theorists. So they ridicule you to get you off watching what they're doing with the other hand.
Sure. Let's straight out of Alinsky. You know, Alinsky, pick your target,
absolutely.
Polarize it, ridicule it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So now that I depressed you so well, It would be nice to get more refugees to get on the program and talk about these things, so maybe Americans will listen to us, because it's very frustrating. I've been talking to people for 50 years in this country, and they always laughed at me. They thought I was paranoid, but now they're beginning to pay attention to me, but I hope it's not too late.
Yeah, well, I pray that it's not too late, too, Balazs. And I, you know, somebody like you and other refugees, I mean, we should be listening to you. You're the people we should be listening to, because you've lived through it. You know, you recognize the signs. You see what's happening. And, you know, like Reagan said, you know, if we lose freedom here, that's it. You know, there's no place else to go. So I'm all for supporting, and you know, I'd like to make that part of my focus in what I do, is really promoting political refugee authors, because we've got to get that message out.
And you know, it's already very dangerous, because people are disappearing. People that are a problem for the government are disappearing, and nobody's asking questions. You know, I don't think, you know, I don't have a Breitbart and other people. You know, it's very frightening. This is what happened in those countries. People that did not go along and not going a step with the government, they disappeared. Things happened to them, accidents and who knows what. And it's happening in America. And the Chicago gangsters do the same thing. And the Chicago politics is the same thing. And as long as the media is selling out Americans, we will not be free, and we will be swallowed up by these people. We need the media, and thank God there is media like yours and educators like Rush and Glenn Beck and many others, and
Michelle Malkin. She's one of my favorites.
More and more every day. Yeah. More and more every day. And
well, it's very telling, Balazs. You know, I was talking about how it really doesn't matter whether there's an R or a D after the name. I mean, there's only a few of them, but there are some patriots elected right now who are fighting the good fight, like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and you know, some others in the House. Louie Gohmert is one that comes to mind. But they are absolutely demonized by members of their own party. And so who will never attack Obama or the left with nearly the same ferocity as they go after constitutional conservatives, if indeed they ever go after the left at all, which
the Republicans in D.C. are all 99% of them are corrupt. They're no different from they're even worse than the Democrats, because we know that they're our enemies. But we always had our hopes of these guys, so they're prostitutes. They sold out, and they're more dangerous, you know, because there are wolves in sheep's skin. We know about the other guys being wolves.
Correct.
You know?
That's what's scary, because so many of the Republicans fool other, what I call low-information Republican voters, who they vote Republican, but they really don't understand the issues. They don't really know the difference between a constitutional conservative and somebody that just has the R after the name. They've bought into – I mean, I have friends who are Republicans who still have bought into – and again, I go back to Agenda Grinding America Down, because it really exposes the utter hypocrisy and the fraud that is the so-called women's liberation movement, which it's a fraud. It's a total fraud. But I actually have a Republican friend who is a registered Republican, and she votes that way, but she really believes that women didn't have rights until the so-called women's movement came along. And I say to her, are you kidding me? My great aunt Emma had her own business back in the 40s. I mean, I had a cousin who was the first female pharmacist back in the 40s. I mean, you know, this is nothing new to my family.
With Democrats, because Democrats, there are a lot of good people. They think it's the same party that was 50 years ago. It isn't. It's been infiltrated by the left totally. And in 1937, the president of the American Socialist Party, when he resigned and retired, he says, I no longer have to do anything, because the left has taken over the Democratic Party, and they're doing our agenda. So we were useless in here, and that happened in 1937. I forgot the guy's name. It sounds some sort of a Polish name, and he just said we're useless anymore, because the Democratic Party is the Socialist Party, and most people don't realize, you know, because they are low information, you know, Democrats, just like the low information Republicans. you know?
Yeah.
It's,
well, and yeah. I was fortunate, and I consider myself very fortunate to have grown up in a very politically engaged and aware home, especially from my mom's side, because my grandfather came here. He was 8 years old. His mother was widowed. Imagine that, a widow from Italy with three young kids. She didn't know anybody here, but she wanted them to have a better life, and they all went on to become pharmacists. And my grandfather, you know, had his own pharmacy, was a brilliant man, worked hard, loved his family, loved his kids, and loved this country. And he was a staunch anti-communist, and he absolutely revered Senator Joe McCarthy. And so my mother was influenced by that and in turn influenced all of us. And so from the time I was young, I mean, I learned about politics and freedom. And I have to say, I mentioned this, I was on a show on Saturday night, and I brought this up. I said, you know, we're talking about government-run schools, and all that is true, how they're indoctrinating kids. But unfortunately, you know, that Catholic schools, in my case, are not immune from that. While you get good religious instruction and good discipline and a great education, politically speaking, you know, all the stuff that Glenn is exposing with social justice, that is nothing new to me. I would come home and get deprogrammed by my mother in terms of the politics they were teaching us in school. So unfortunately, yeah. It's infected everything.
Yeah, it's been going on for a long time. Well, Daria, thank you for a great interview.
Before we go, you're welcome. Before we go, I just let everybody know again where they can find, we'll just tell them together. You can find Tweezer Beezer on Facebook. Follow at Tweezer Beezer on Twitter. We've got a Twitter account going. And at Balazs Art, that's BalazsArt. And on RightStream, we also have it. You can follow our board there, and I'm posting a lot about Tweezer there. And Balazs, I want to thank you. I know we ran long here, but thanks for hanging with me.
It was wonderful. Thank you, and I hope to write another book so I can be on your show again.
All right. Well, we will be talking again very soon. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please check out Tweezer Beezer. And join me here for RightStream again next Tuesday when the host of Just Believe, Lisa Tarvez, will be joining me, and we're going to talk about all of the exciting things coming up for the network. So stay in the flow of creativity, everyone, and thanks again for listening. And Balazs, again, thank you for being my guest and hanging with me all this time.
I thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, everyone. Until next week. Stay in the flow of creativity.